The Secret World Chronicle, a podcast series created by Mercedes Lackey and Steve Libby. White Bird, written by Mercedes Lackey, read by Veronica Jaguar. Blanchette guided her Spitfire through the low-hanging winter clouds, ducking below the ceiling only now and again to confirm her heading. This was no kind of weather to be flying in, but the Armée de l'Air needed their planes, and as soon as one was fit to fly, one of the ferry pilots would be called from the barracks to take it out to its destination. British Spitfires and some P-51s were replacing the Dawatim D-520s, despite much anguish on the part of the French pilots. Still, it could not be denied that the Spitfire was, in every way, superior to her French counterpart. Jean loved the way they handled in every way, and whenever she had to turn her charge over at the end of a flight, a part of her mourned at giving it up. They called to her soul, these lovely creatures of war. They called to her heart. They told her that it was she who should be guiding them against the filthy Boche, and not whoever would get them. It wasn't as if she wanted to be a ferry pilot. She was as good as the best of the Frenchmen flying now, and better than most. She had thousands of hours in air raced under her belt, and she knew this countryside from the air as most folk knew the roads and lanes around their little villages. She had been racing over it since she had been old enough to beg, bribe, and browbeat those around her into letting her into a cockpit. Most little girls were horse-mad, and grew out of it. Jean was airplane mad, and never would. Unlike the vast majority of these horse-mad little girls, Jean had the wherewithal to satisfy her craving, and the stubborn temper to persist in the face of the most adamant opposition. She dropped below the clouds again, just verifying that she was where she thought she should be. The war-torn landscape was a hell of shattered trees, shattered villages, and cratered fields, but the wretched Boche tried to refrain from shelling the village churches directly. Not because there were any kind of religious, the opposite, in fact, since they went out of their way to defile the places and murder and torment priests and nuns. No, it was because the tall steeples gave them landmarks to fly by too, as well as marking points to shell or bomb. She spotted the tipsy little shell of Sainte-Marie-aux-Fleurs below her, and corrected her course a trifle, then eased back up into the shelter of the clouds. No, she did not want to be here, in a plane she must give over into the hands of some clumsy recruit, a plan with empty six empty guns, an easy target for Eisenfaust Messerschmitts. She wanted to be fighting. How not? She was raised in Orleans, she was named Jean, and like every little French girl, she was fed the tales of Saint Jeanne d'Arc the way American children were fed the tales of Mickey Mouse. A broadside wind buffeted the little plane, and again she dropped below the cloud cover to check her bearings. The storm was worsening. She remembered another day, another storm.
The leaves blow across the long black road to the darkened sky in its rage. But the white bird just sits in her cage, unknown. White bird must fly.
Jeanette played in the opulent nursery of her parents' chateau outside Orleans, with her birthday presents. Or To be precise, with one of her birthday presents, the only thing she had specifically requested that she had gotten. The lovely dolls, porcelain beauties all, sat on a shelf with the rest of her dolls, pristine and untouched. The beautiful dollhouse, a miniature of the chateau itself, served only one purpose: to house the wood and paper, the glue and thread that she used to make her air fleet. And now she played quietly with the pride of her air fleet, an exact model of a real plane. But she did not play with it as another child would, soaring it over her own head as she ran, and making it do all the aerobatics she had seen the stunning pilots in fairs and shows do. No. She was studying it, so that she might make more. Only her grand-mère, who understood her, had given her what she had asked for. Her papa should have understood her. Her papa was mad for motor cars, for speed, and raced as often as he could escape from the business of his wine and vineyards. But he did not. Perhaps because he seldom saw her and then never looked at her. She knew why. He did not want to see her. He wanted to see the boy that she should have been. Instead, she was the disappointing girl who had cost her mamma her life. She understood all these things dimly, for grand-mère had explained them patiently to her after one too many times of being unable to please him and retreating to her bed in misery. Papa was grand-mère's son, and it made her sad to see how he neglected Jean, so it was grand-mère who tried to take the place of both mamma and papa. And it was grand-mère who was there when, with a clap of thunder that seemed to herald the end of the world, the doors to the chateau burst open, and the building erupted with screams and wailing. Grand-mère who held her and tried to comfort her, when the body of the chateau's master, killed by the speed he worshipped, was carried in on the raging wings of the storm. Might have been like 100 other rich little girls, if it had not been for grand-mère. But grand-mère would not let her give up her need to fly. It was grand-mère to whom she told the dreams she had, of soaring, arms outstretched, through blue skies and stormy, without need for a plane. It was grand-mère who bought her books on aviation, took her unfailingly to aviation displays and shows. It was grand-mère who persuaded a pilot, who gave lessons that teaching the little girl could do no harm. For after all, what could she do with the lessons? Everyone knew that girls did not fly. Of course, the fat wad of francs did a great deal of persuasion, too. But girls did fly, were flying in increasing numbers. Jean got her lessons. Then Jean got her airstrip where the unused tennis courts had been. Then Jean got her racing plane. And before she died, grand-mère got to see Jean win her first race. She did not weep at grand-mère's funeral. People whispered, she knew. But she had had a dream that night of flying free beside a startling youthful grand-mère who told her, "The sky is your home and your lover, chérie. Never let anyone make you give it up." "And what about you?" she asked, crying then, as she had not at the funeral. "Ah, my home is the stars now," grand-mère had said, with a brilliant smile. "I am going on such a journey." And with that, she had shot ahead of Jean, soaring into the night sky, until Jean lost sight of her altogether, and she was gone.
The sunset's gone, the sunset's gone.
wind buffeted the plane again, slowing it sideways. Jean did not fight the controls. She caressed them, eased them over, making the plane fly with the storm and not against it. No one really understood how she was able to feel so at one with the machinery. Not even Henri, who lovingly worked on these beauties, who crooned to them and talked to them and coaxed them back to life after grievous injuries. It was hard for a woman like Jean to find a lover. Fellow pilots did not hold the women in great esteem. Some regarded them with anger, as interlopers. Some regarded them as an affront to nature. Some laughed at them, as if this need that they shared was something in a female that was nothing more than a childish whim, soon grown out of. And last of all, some men regarded them as something to be conquered and cured of their affliction, so that they could display their trophy before all the other men as proof of their prowess. But Henri Dubois, engineer and mechanic, shared her love of the planes without sharing the love of flying. He did not understand it, but he did understand how it was an all-consuming passion. He, of all the men she had ever met, was willing to share her with that passion. But perhaps even that would not have happened had the war not come. The war and the Bush and their hideous supermen, which she must at all costs avoid every time she delivered an airplane to the airfields of Belgium. She dropped below the clouds again, into lashing curtains of rain, and a tiny, tiny thread of alarm thrilled along her nerves. This storm was stronger than it should have been. Much. Not only had there been no prediction of such a storm, but it felt wrong. Jean always had a kind of sixth sense for the weather, as she did for her planes, and this storm felt wrong. There was one of Eisenfaust's hellish squadron who was said to fly in on storms like this. Valkyrie. That sixth sense was all that saved Jean at the moment, when the clouds tore open and lightning slashed through on either side of the golden Messerschmitt with its distinctive snarling horse nose painting. As bullets from the Messerschmitt's guns tore through the place where she had been, Jean had side-slipped the Spitfire out of the way and sent her into a deep diving turn. The forces of gravity and centripetal force shoved her back and sideways into the seat. She felt the skin of her cheeks stretching back over her bared teeth. She squeezed her insides as hard as she could to keep from blacking out, and felt the telltale juddering in her hands wrapping around the stick, as the Spitfire warned her that she was reaching the limit of what the plane could take. At the last possible moment, she pulled up, mere feet from the churned-out earth of the field below her. The Spitfire soared, and she glanced down and sideways, hoping without much hope to see the smoke and crater where Valkyrie's own craft had plowed into the ground. Instead, she felt, as if in her own body, the bullets stitching across her right wing. She had no weapons of her own. All she could do was try to outfly the German bitch. And Valkyrie was one of the superhumans. She could take more G-stress, she had better, faster reactions. And should Jean somehow make her crash, she would walk away from it. No, thought Jean, as she did a wing over that turned into a hammerfall. I will not let you take my sky. They did not fight their way across the sky, with lightning arcing all around them, even striking the planes themselves. There was no fight here, for Jean could not fight. She could only try to run, tiny falcon pursued by the great, cruel golden eagle, losing a little more ground with every line of bullets that stitched across some part of the plane. And then, Jean felt it. Felt the moment when the damage reached the critical level. Felt the weakened wings start to part from the body, the tail empennage bending and about to snap under the stress of the turn. And felt, rather than saw, the massive bolt of lightning that enveloped plane and Jean, and all in a moment of searing whiteness, and a mental shriek of outrage and denial. There was a single moment of unbelievable pain, as if her entire body was taken apart in an instant, and instantly reformed into a whole new shape. And then, she was flying. She was not in the plane. She was the plane. Wings were at her back, her arms stretched out beneath them, both swept back like a V. She felt. It felt like a second set of lungs, except it was above her, and it sucked in the air and squirted it out so that she was propelled as she had once seen a squid propelled. She vaguely remembered something Henri had been obsessed with. Something. A rocket? A jet? She felt the armor. A part of her, a metal skin covering every part of her, but especially heavy on her visored head. Visor? Yes, she had a visor, a glass visor protecting her eyes, and she sensed the inches thick plating on her hands and her head, and she saw Valkyrie's plane below her, and she knew what it was she had to do. She would knock that Teutonic bitch out of her sky. She went into a steep dive, and only the German's own sixth sense and lightning reflexes saved her. Now, the shoe was on the other foot. She was faster than the Messerschmitt, and more maneuverable. But that speed was her undoing, for she overshot Valkyrie time and time again, and had to turn and make up the distance, before she could try to get close. And finally, she was defeated in her attempt to get to the German, by the only weapon Valkyrie could bring to bear to cover her retreat. The storm. Suddenly, Jean was all but knocked out of the sky by the torrent of rain that poured out of the clouds. She couldn't see. She could barely stay aloft. She certainly could not find the German. It was over in a moment. Not even a supernatural storm could sustain itself at that level for long. But when the rain subsided, Valkyrie was gone. And now, too weary to think, Jean only turned herself towards the distant airfield that she had flown out of. Home. She wanted to go home. It was a shock to the airfield command to hear Jean's voice on the radio reporting an encounter with Valkyrie. It was a greater shock to see what landed. They only heard snatches of the encounter there out on the tarmac, between what had been Jean Blanchet and the engineer they all knew had been her lover, Henri Dubois. Mostly, it was drowned out in the static on the radio, static that sounded like electricity weeping. "It does not come off, but I cannot. It was not my fault. Would you rather I had died?" But they did hear Henri's shouted reply to that question, which rang across the airfield like a bullet from an executioner's rifle. "Yes!" The man made a gesture in which horror and revulsion were equally mixed, turned, and walked away without looking back, as the terrible static sobbed over the airways, and the men in the control tower fell utterly silent. They sensed that, had the rigid skin allowed it, the strange figure on the runway would have sagged in despair. And then, as the static faded, and the silence stretched as tight as an overwound violin string, the figure raised her head and, from the posture, looked into the sky. "Clear the runway," said the voice, like Jean's, but with a hardness in it they had never heard before. "There are Boches in my sky. When I am finished with my patrol, there will be fewer of them." "But, Jean," someone ventured. "Jean Blanchet is dead," the voice replied, hard and dead. "I am La Force en Blanc, and the skies are mine."